My name is Raj. I work as a software developer for Microsoft Open Technologies, which is a fully owned subsidiary of Microsoft Corp. So we focus on open source, open standards. So that's what we essentially do. And Docker and many of the other open source DevOps tools are one of the key focus areas for Microsoft Open Tech. So in this session, you know, it's more or less it's a chalk talk, right? So the idea is to kind of have a discussion and kind of, you know, we can take this in whatever direction you guys are interested to take it in. The idea is to kind of talk about Docker and what kind of support we have for Docker on Azure and on Windows. And, you know, kind of want to keep this more or less on demos, you know, kind of take a look at how you actually get things done with Docker on Azure, with Docker on Windows. And also, time permitting, take a look at, you know, how Docker compares with tools like Chef and Prepared or Vagrant and Packer, right? So that kind of is the overall agenda, and we'll see how far we can go with things, with, given that we have 1 hour, or less than an hour. how many of you here have used Docker or know what Docker is all about? So it's probably about 25% of the room. So I guess it is worthwhile taking a look at what Docker really is. You know, whenever I talk about Docker or containers in general with people, there seems to be a lot of confusion around what it really means, like what is it, right? So once you kind of, you know, see what are the underlying technologies on which Docker is built, it turns out to be a fairly straightforward concept. It's not that complicated. So the roots of Docker starts in a couple of technologies that are there in Linux, called as Linux namespaces. How many of you know what is Linux namespace? Do you want to take a shot at it? Like what it is? I guess it's there on the slides, maybe it is. It's not a test, but if you have used it, maybe you can take a shot at it. Just want to keep it interactive, possibly. I know you just come back from lunch. Anybody, you know what namespace is? So it turns out Linux namespaces is a kernel feature in Linux. And the idea is, you know, on phones, for example, right? You might have heard of the term chroot. Chroot is a utility on Linux, which basically allows you to run processes on Linux where you kind of constrain the file system, right? The parts of the file system that it has access to. And that process, when you run it under a you call it a chroot or a jail, right? So when you run it inside that environment, that sandboxed environment, that process is able to only see the parts of the file system that you have explicitly allowed it to see, right? So it doesn't even know that there is a world outside of that subset of the file system that you've created. So namespace is essentially that, extended to the idea of not just the file system, but for the process space. Like what other processes can a process look at, right? When you call the system API call to enumerate the list of processes, what process can you look at, right? So you can constrain that, you can say that, this process will run in this particular namespace and it can only take a look at, you know, these number of processes, other processes that are running on the system. Network interfaces. So you can launch a process and configure that particular process running in a namespace and say that this process can only look at these two network cards, or it cannot look at any network card. I will create a virtual network card and I will completely control the network traffic that goes or is produced, you know, from or into this particular process, and that, you know, I will manage the proxying part of it, right? I'll create a bridge and then that will talk to the actual network card and so forth, right? So you can create a namespace for constraining access to network interfaces. You can create namespaces for accessing, you know, controlling access to devices and so forth. This is namespaces, right? So the idea is to create an abstraction that allows you to restrain or constrain access to various system resources. And then there is this idea of called C groups. Anybody? Yeah. Control groups. Right. So what she said is control groups is the capability that Linux again has, which allows you to specify how much resource access a particular process has. Like, you know, for example, you can constrain a particular process to use only one or four cores that are there on the machine, or you can say that it can access only 1 gigabyte of the how many gigabytes you have on the machine, right? So you can constrain memory, you can constrain access to CPU, and then you can constrain access to again physical devices that are connected to that host, right? You can see that this particular process can access only this device. And then C groups allows you to specify this in a hierarchy of, in abstraction, where you can establish a hierarchy, and depending on what level of the hierarchy a process is running on, that determines what level of access it has to various resources on the machine. So C groups are something that Google had created. They contributed that to the Linux kernel, and now it's part of the Linux kernel. And then there is another concept, Linux concept, called as layered file systems or union file systems. Anybody know what is union? What is a union file system? It's there on the slide, but if you used it, AUFS or UnionFS. So these are a couple of file systems that essentially the idea is you can create a file system, a union file system, that is layered on top of other file systems, right? So you might have an EXTFS or whatever it is running on top of. And then you can say that this particular, you can create a mount point, right? You can create a virtual file system at a specific mount point, and you can say that this can, it's a bit like chroot, but taken to a whole new level, right? So you can say that I can designate folders ABC and say that these particular three folders, which could be on completely different locations, like it could be on your local file system, it could be on the network, and you can say that create a new file system, mount it at this particular mount point, and it will be packed by these locations, right? And what the union file system will do is, it will do a union of all those sources and create you a unified, and give you a unified view of those sources, right? And then the process that runs inside that particular, when the process looks at that particular mount point, it will see a unified view of it, right? So that is the idea behind a unified file system. So these are kind of the core building blocks, right? So Linux containers is basically, The big idea is to take these technologies, namespaces, which is an abstraction that allows you to kind of constrain what resources your app has access to. C groups, which allow you to constrain how much of those resources it has access to. And union file systems, which allow you to create a virtual file system on top of other file systems. And then combine all of these and create tooling that allows you to create what is called as a container. So basically a container is essentially all of these three mixed together, right? So you specify a very, very precise environment for a process or a set of processes to run, right? So that's what a container essentially boils down to. And Docker is not the first technology that came exploiting this. You might have heard of LXC, Linux containers. So that is exactly like Docker. That allows you to create containers, run processes in them, manage them, bring them up, bring them down, and so forth. So one common question that people have is, how are containers different from, virtual machines, right? So again, this is probably a standard slide. Like if you look at a standard picture, if you look at what the differences are, you might probably be able to tell. But one key thing that you will notice is for virtual machines, you have the hypervisor, right, that is running on bare metal, that is running on the physical machine. And the hypervisor is the one that is kind of giving you a virtualized view of the CPU and other resources that are available on the machine to guest operating systems that are running on top of it. Right, if you look at this stack, you have, for each of these applications, you have the entire operating system being installed. Right, so you have an operating system, and on top of that you have your binaries and libraries, and then on top of that you have your application running. And if you want to run another application, that entire stack has to be replicated, and that's how it works, right? So one key difference with containers is that at this level, you don't have that operating system. Operating system is taken out of the equation completely, right? So how many other containers you have running on a particular machine, a particular host, all of them are sharing that particular kernel, right? So the kernel is being shared across all containers. So you get the same kernel. So I guess that could be the pro and the con, right? So in this case, you can actually specify your requirement all the way down to the kernel. You can say that my app runs on a particular version of this particular kernel, and then your app runs. Here, the kernel is shared, so you're not able to do that. But on the flip side, your apps are extremely, extremely lightweight. Like, if you really think about it, right? You know how containers work, so they're simply processes. You're creating processes that are running inside a software abstraction. So launching a container is no different from launching a process, right? So just opening VI or Notepad on Windows or whatever, right? So how long does that take? That is the amount of time it takes to spin up a container. So containers are extremely cheap, they're extremely fast to start and stop, and they share your host operating system. So the benefit is, again, when you're running your application, when you have multiple applications running on the same machine or multiple containers, you typically want these apps to not interfere with each other, right? So you want, when you talk about isolation, right? With virtual machines, you get maximum isolation. Like, they're running on completely different virtual machines, so there is no way that app A on VM1 can do anything with app B on VM2, right? They don't even know they're running each other. You have to explicitly set up networking and whatnot. It's the same idea here. So with app A and app B running in two different containers, you get the same isolation benefits that you get with virtual machines, right? It is not isolation to the same level as you get with virtual machines, right? It's much more lightweight than that, because this is backed by what? By C groups, by namespaces, basically kernel features that are simulating the isolation, right? It's not real isolation. So I guess one of the drawbacks is if the Docker engine, which is the service that is managing the containers on that host, has a vulnerability, let's say, right, a security vulnerability, which one of the containers is able to exploit, then potentially you can have apps being able to, you know, access the host or access other containers and things like that. So the engine has to be, you know, really rock solid and so forth. Docker, in this case, is an open source project. Right, so there's a lot of eyeballs. I mean, given the amount of attention it is getting, there's a lot of eyeballs looking at its source code, and it's getting a lot of traction. Right? So this over time is going to become extremely rock solid, right? And whatever chinks are there, they're going to get ironed out. And then you have this really nice way of getting the best of both. You get the isolation benefits of a VM, but then you get the agility and the performance of a single process. Right? So that's kind of the sell for containers, and that's the reason why this is kind of you know, tremendously. Right. So the question is, I mentioned Docker on Windows. So what is the story behind that? So as of today, Docker is a technology which runs on Linux, right? Like we just mentioned, it depends on these Linux features. What is the support on Windows that we have as of today? You have the Docker client. So here you have this machine where you have the Docker engine. Right? The Docker engine is basically a service which you can connect to and administer from, you know, from this machine or from any other machine remotely over the network as well. So the idea is, in a typical case, you would be running this in the cloud, right, on Azure or whichever cloud. You would be running it there, and then you would be administering it remotely from your machines, right? So one of the things that, in fact, MS OpenTech has worked with the Docker community is to port the Docker client to Windows. So today it is possible to administer Docker. So we'll take a look at, we'll run it and check it out. You can administer a Docker host that is running on Linux and anywhere from a Windows client using the Docker client. So the docker.exe has been, the Docker binary has been ported to Windows. Now you can administer. You can't run Docker containers on Windows machines yet, as of today, but you can administer Docker machine containers that are running on a Docker host on a Linux machine from a Windows client. So what is going to come in the future, this has again already been announced by the Windows team, is support for a containers on Windows server. This is going to come out in the Windows Threshold release, which is the next edition of Windows Server. So container support in Windows is coming, in Windows, right, Windows Server. That's one. And two is support for Docker for Windows containers. So that is something that is being engineered as we speak as well. So whenever the container support shows up, eventually you will also see support. In fact, this support is being built in collaboration with the Docker project, with the Docker community. And it's going to be built completely in the open. So there will be complete support for Docker for Windows containers as well, eventually, as soon as Windows containers ships. So that's the Windows story, right? So to quickly kind of summarize, you know, Docker is a tool, essentially, that's what it is, right? So Docker is essentially a tool that makes you use containers in a fairly straightforward fashion, right? It makes that really, really simple to deal with. Instead of having to deal with namespaces and control groups, Docker is at a much higher level abstraction. You can define a container as an image and so forth, right? So Docker is simply a tool. Containers are defined by images, which are very, very simple text files called as a Docker file, where you go and specify exactly what your container should look like, and then Docker simply, you know, spins that container up based on that specification. It allows you to internetwork containers. So if you want container A to talk to container B, you have to actually set up networking, even though they're running on the same host, right? Or if they're not running on the same host, their containers running on different hosts, whatever the case may be, you actually need to set up networking for them to be able to communicate with each other, right? So the abstraction of being a separate machine is kind of maintained. You can have containers persist information, right? So containers can be spinned up, they can be, you know, destroyed, however you like, right? Depending on your requirement, right? So what about data? So if you have a database running inside a container, obviously the data that that particular system is managing needs to survive container restarts or container, you know, like you can delete a container, recreate a container, but your data should persist. So you can do things like that using support for what is called as volumes. I guess the real key point for Docker is the rich and vibrant ecosystem, right? So the community has really gotten behind Docker, right? So you will find that there is a lot of, there is something called the Docker registry. The Docker Hub is basically a library of pre-created Docker images, right? I think there are about 80,000 plus images already in the Docker Hub, right, that the community has created. So it's really extremely rich. So that's really the reason why the entire ecosystem is kind of building up behind or basically backing Docker. There are alternate technologies that are either being developed or have been announced. For example, one is called as Rocket. I don't know if you've heard of that. This is a project being driven by a Linux distribution company called as CoreOS. So they have come out with their own technology called Rocket. Some people say it's vaporware, some people say it's going to come, so I don't know what's going to happen. But right now, the momentum is behind Docker. So let's take a look at, you know, what using Docker looks like, right? So just make that a bit here. All right. So how many of you here have used Node.js? So okay, so about 30%. So Node.js, for the rest of you, Node.js is a JavaScript-based server framework, right? You can build server applications using JavaScript, and Node.js enables you to do that. It uses Google's V8 JavaScript engine. So let's see what it takes to quickly create and spin up a Node.js-based application, right? So what I'll do is I'll say express azconf. So Express is basically a Node.js based web application framework. Like you have ASP.NET for .NET, right? So this is like an MVC framework for Node.js. So I have a basic application just scaffolded out here. I'll install the dependencies that this particular application needs. Maybe I'll open and make some changes to it. So we have it here. Azconf. Maybe I'll go to one of the routes here. Maybe I'll change this to Azure Conference 2015. So we have all the dependencies installed. So now I can simply say npm start, and the application started on my local machine. Right. So now I can open a web browser and say localhost 3000, and then you have the app running. So great, so I have a very simple app that I've created, right? Now imagine that I want to take this app and run it on Docker, right, on a Docker container. So how would you do that? So the basic idea is you create what is known as a Docker file. So let me show you what that looks like. Let me connect to a Linux machine that is running on Azure. So what I've done is I've spinned up a Linux VM on Azure and have installed and configured Docker on that machine. Alright, so the Docker client looks like that, or once you set up the environment, it will look like that. So let me enter a root shell here and alright, so that's the Docker binary, right? So if you want to, for example, see you know what containers are already running on this machine, what you can do is you can say Docker VS, and that tells you what containers are running. Right now there is no containers. You can type Docker images, and it shows you what images have already been pulled into this machine. So earlier I spoke to you about Docker Hub, right? So the Docker Hub is a registry that hub.docker.com, where you have, you know, you can basically get all kinds of images. Like if you go to browse repos here, once again, alright, so there are all kinds of repos, like I said, right, over 80,000 images. Some of them are officially certified by Docker, and you know, like the basic, right, like Ubuntu, Redis, MySQL, and so forth. You can go and register for an account here and create your own images as well for your own use. Public images are completely free. If you want to host private, just like GitHub, right? If you want to host private images, then they have a subscription model, but for public images, it's completely free. So, for example, if I want to run an Ubuntu image on top of this, right? So I can say Docker run Ubuntu, and on Ubuntu I want to run a bash shell. So in this case, what Docker actually does is it actually goes and spins up an Ubuntu environment on top of this particular machine. So you might be wondering, like, am I like running another operating system on top of this operating system? No, that's not what's happening. Essentially, it's creating the environment that, see, Ubuntu is simply a Linux distribution, right? So it's basically a company taking a bunch of Linux utilities, packaging them up together as a single package called as Ubuntu or Debian or Fedora or Red Hat, and then they are shipping that, right? That's all a distribution is. So there's nothing stopping you from creating a container-based Ubuntu distribution. If you simply replicate all of the binaries and the libraries that are there in that distribution, then you can essentially, so for example, on the host here is Ubuntu, I can run Fedora on top of this, right, by simply getting those binaries. So there are images like that. So this is basically, I'm inside a shell, inside a Ubuntu container running on top of Docker, right? So the IT flag that you saw allows you to open an interactive terminal into a container, but that's typically not how you would use it. You typically want to automate this by, you know, spinning up containers remotely and slowing them down and so forth. But it does support this if you want to like log into a container and debug something. So I think I already have that Node app here somewhere. Maybe there it is. All right. So this is a Docker file, right? As you can tell, it's like extremely bare bones. I guess the biggest cell for Docker is that first line there that you see, from node colon 0.12 on build and so forth, right? Now that string represents an image, a name, an image name from the Docker registry, from the Docker Hub, right? So, and then I'm saying that on top of that, run expose the port 3000, right? So these two lines are all it needs. So you might think that that's really less, like how do you know which app to deploy and so forth. So all of that information is actually encoded in the base image from which I'm basing this image. What is the base image? Node 0.12 blah blah blah, right? So if you go to the Docker Hub, you can actually see that. In fact, it's right here. So I'm taking the latest version of it here, right? So this one. So this is the for that particular image, right? So it itself is based on node 0.12, and then it runs, it has a few commands, like the first one is a run command. It says make dir this particular folder, use that as the working directory, and when this particular image is built, copy package.json from the local machine to that, run npm install, and so on, right? These are the instructions that the Docker engine is going to run whenever you deploy an image based off of this particular file or a derivative of this. So our app is a derivative of this particular Docker file. So here when I say from node 0.12 on build, it will actually run all of this, and it will also run whatever is there inside the Docker file for that and so forth. Right? So ultimately, if you keep walking down this tree, you will find that it starts off somewhere with Ubuntu or Fedora or whatever this is based on, and then it builds that environment all the way up to here, right? So basically you get to benefit from this whole tree of images that have already been created, right? These have been created, they've been tested, they're known to work well, and you are able to simply benefit by building an app on top of that. So once you have the Docker file, So now you can simply say docker build, give it a tag name, say reroute slash node or azconf. So typo there. So in this case, it went ahead and built it. The first time you do it, typically this can take some amount of time. Since I've already built it before, all of the dependencies have already been downloaded on this particular host, so that was fairly rapid. And then that's it, right? So it simply executed all the steps that were there in the file, and then it built that image. So now if I go to Docker images, what you'll find is that particular image is showing up somewhere here. So there you can see this is avrunju slash azconf. You can see that image is actually 719 something MB. So where is all that, you know, that dependencies? Those are all the dependencies that this particular image was built on top of, right? And the Docker engine caches dependencies and so forth. So first time you get an image, it will of course download it. Subsequently, everything is cached. Now if I want to spin up a VM on top of this, I can simply say docker run, hyphen D to say that it should be a daemon, that is a service. And then I can give the name of the, I can map the port. So I can say, port map 3000 on the container to 3000 on the host. So which means that the container is listening on port 3000. I want that port to be forwarded to port 3000 on the host machine as well. Right? So that's what this particular hyphen P means. And then I specify the name of the container. And that's it. So that's it, the container is running now. So if I do a docker ps, you should see that there is a container here. Now I've already added an endpoint for this particular virtual machine in Azure. So if I go to Azure here, virtual machines, I have node 12vm1, if I go to endpoints, so this I had already done before, so that particular line that you see there, right, so here I've already created a port mapping from 3000 to 3000, right, so I've already done that. So now we should be able to do something like node12vm1.cloudapp.net, and you see that app is being now served over the public internet, right? So in this case, the traffic is going to the host VM to actually the Azure load balancer. The load balancer looks at the endpoint mapping, takes the 3000 mapping, goes to the VM, and the VM's Docker engine takes that traffic and routes it to the container, and the, you know, so it's going through that entire tree. So in this case, we simply created a very simple container and ran it on Azure, right? But we did this completely on, in fact, let's take a look at that. We did this completely on Linux. So what can you do from Windows, right? So here I have a Windows Server machine running. I have Docker installed here. So you can run the same. Okay, I have it. I haven't renamed the exe, so this is 1.5.0 version of Docker. So I can simply rename it to just Docker. Alright. So a little PowerShell is a little finicky, you have to put a dot slash. So you know this is basically that same Docker client that is running on a Windows machine, right? And just as before, you can actually connect to a remote host. So, you know, you would essentially say set docker host equals, you know, node12vm1.cloudapp.net. I'll have to give the port on which the Docker engine is listening. I'm not entirely sure what that port is. It's probably 2375. Let's take a look at that. Yeah, Docker is 2376. Expert properties font the font size here. There you go. Alright, so let's do that same thing. Set Docker host equals TCP. So this is my app running in the cloud. 2376. So in this case, it's actually trying to connect. I have a feeling this will not connect because I've set up cert TLS. Oh, I could do that as well. Set Docker TLS verify equals 1. So basically, these two environment variables. There you go. So these two environment variables configure, you know, what host that particular Docker client is running to. The Docker host is the URL of the machine that the client is going to administer, and then Docker TLS verify is basically another environment variable that configures Docker to use TLS encryption for the communication between the client and the server. In this case, I have to set up the certs. I think this machine, I didn't put the certs from the server. But once you set that up, so essentially it's looking for the certs in this particular location. So once you get the certificates from the daemon to this particular machine, you'll be able to communicate. So that's the Docker client that allows you to administer a machine from a Windows box. There's another Docker project called as Docker Machine. So Docker Machine is a project from Docker that allows you to spin up Docker hosts very, very easily, right? So that has been ported to Windows as well. So this is the machine, let's see. So what this allows you to do is, so in this case I had pre-created the Nerd Ubuntu VM1 in Azure, right? But how do you spin up your own VMs like that? So you use Docker Machine. So with Docker Machine, you can go ahead and create a VM. So let me show you what that looks like. So in this case, I'm saying machine create. The Docker machine supports multiple drivers. In fact, if you just run machine, you'll be able to see the number of drivers that it actually supports, which is humongous. So if I say machine create, so that's a lot of stuff. So there's support for vSphere, there's support for VMware vCloud, SoftLayer, Rackspace, OpenStack, Google, AWS, and you will also see support for Hyper-V and support for Azure, right? So machine has, so this is something that again MS OpenTech contributed to the Docker project, Docker Machine project, and we added support for creating Docker hosts on Hyper-V, on a Windows hypervisor, and also on Azure. So this particular example that you're seeing here is an example of creating a Docker host on Hyper-V. So create, the driver is Hyper-V, I'm using a host, a Linux distribution called as Boot to Docker. So Boot to Docker is a project, as you know, it's an associated project with Docker where somebody created an extremely minimal distribution of Linux. The ISO is only 23 megs, right? It's an extremely tiny Linux. So you can use, the idea is that, you know, the Docker container, you will specify what all you need for your app, right? So the host machine that is running the container doesn't need to have anything beyond what is necessary to run Docker. That's all you need, right? So everything else, you know, your app will provide. So that's why this container, this ISO is so tiny. Sorry?
What does the driver mean?
The driver means that I want to use the Hyper-V as the target. So machine can be used to create hosts on anything, like on AWS or whatever, right? So here I'm saying, connecting to Hyper-V on this machine. So it uses PowerShell Hyper-V extensions to actually drive Hyper-V. The question is, how do we handle different versions of Windows and Linux? So, how do you mean? So, when you're...
See here, we are using the libraries to create that machine from the container.
From a image?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, for example, I have to deploy Windows 8.1 machine library. So, how can you do that?
So, the question is, how can you deploy Windows 8.1 machine? So, right now, Windows containers, Windows cannot run on Linux, right? So,
yeah.
As of today, the containers have to be Linux applications. So applications that run on top of Linux, right? You can run different versions of OS distributions. Like I have a particular kernel version. I have Ubuntu 12 and Ubuntu 14. right? I can run both of them. I can run a containers that run on top of them, right, at the same time. So I can have Ubuntu 12 and 14 running on the same host, the same time. Docker can handle that, no problem. As far as the version of the base image is concerned, the host operating system is concerned, that is no different from how we manage it today, right? You can upgrade your Linux installation as you do today with whatever tools you use today. That doesn't change. The containers that run on top of your Docker engine, you know, Docker supports multiple. As long as the kernel version is the same and they do run with those particular distributions of Linux, you can.
How about utilization?
Right. So a couple of ways. One is so while we are talking, I'll just get that going because it takes some time. So one is, of course, you can use your operating system diagnostics. You can definitely use that because, like I said, mentioned earlier, right? Containers are simply processes. So whatever diagnostics Linux provides today to monitor processes, you can continue to use them. In addition to that, Docker itself provides additional diagnostics. So so while that is going on, you know, for example, you can take a so you know, one bare bones thing that you can do is you can say Docker inspect. You can see that it comes up with funny names for containers. So you can specify a name for a container yourself. If you don't, Docker comes up with names like this: Serene, Albertine. You know who that is? I found that it's all scientist names. Like sometimes I'll get Sad Einstein. You know, things like that. But anyway, so when I say Docker inspect, so it gives you a bunch of information about that particular running container, right? So you can use that. And then if you look at the Docker remote API itself, they provide a whole lot more information. I haven't dug deep into that, but yeah, there is diagnostics that you can take advantage of. And also when you're spinning up containers, you can specify constraints. So you can say that this container can only use 512 megs of RAM, or you know, it can only use 20% of the CPU, whatever. You can specify those constraints, and then Docker will ensure that those constraints are applied.
Depending on Docker, like, then if you are running Azure,
how does your modulation? So, as of today, when you're running on Azure, you're running it on your own VM. So you're first spinning up a VM, and on top of that VM, you're running your Docker containers. So whatever we use today, right, the constraints that we have today for, so for example, you have sizes for VM, so you can create a small VM, large VM. Now you have the Godzilla size VM, the G-series. So in those constraints will continue to apply for your host VM, and then the Docker containers will run on top of that. You can configure however you want.
Sure, so Docker runs on the VM, but
that
is, if I want to scale it, mm-hmm. then how it works?
Right.
The VM is constrained.
Correct. So the question is, if you want to horizontally scale an application which is running on top of containers across hosts, how would you do that, right? So that is, you know, that is the next level of question that you will definitely have. Like when you come to real world applications that you want to run, definitely your applications are going to scale beyond a single host. So in that case, how would you do it? So here you can see that. So let's look at that next. Just want to quickly show you that this particular VM has now been created. If I open Hyper-V Manager, you will see that I'll have to connect to the local computer here. It has created a VM. So this. Sorry? Yeah, the comment is, could I have used any other management tool? Absolutely, yes. The benefit of using machine is it's kind of, you know, you can have a single set of scripts to automate your deployments and simply change your driver depending on where you want to run it. So you can imagine a setup where the developers use Hyper-V to do their local testing, and the testers might have an Azure subscription, and they use the exact same scripts, changing only the driver, and deploy to Azure and test. And then you take those exact same scripts, deploy to production, right? Things like that. So that's what machine gives you. Or, you know, again, you know, if you want to switch providers, you can do that, right? So if you're not happy with AWS and you use Azure, this is the way to do it. So here is the container running in Hyper-V, and it also gives you other tools, like, you know, you can say machine, ls, and it gives you the list of machines that are, the Docker machines that are running on this particular host. It gives you information about them. So if I want to SSH into one of them, I can say machine SSH. The star here tells you which is the currently active one. So which means that if I simply say machine SSH and don't say which host I want to connect to, it will connect to the active one. So in this case, it connected to nerd docker vm4. So now I have a shell inside of that vm, right? And now I can run docker and do all kinds of things, right? So I can say docker run hello world, and this basically goes and downloads the docker image for hello world, and then it will run that particular image. So hello world is a very simple image which simply prints some text to the screen, and that's it. So in this case, it is the docker engine is actually pulling the image from the registry, and then it prints some help text there, right? So that is machine, right? So the gentleman here, his question was about the next topic that I'm going to talk about. Yes, so Hyper-V and Azure, so both are support. Exactly. So the question is, all that machine is doing is it's setting up a VM for you, right, and installing Docker on that VM. So what is the OS? The OS is a project called as boot to Docker. So boot to Docker is a project associated with Docker, as you might imagine. So basically what it is it's a really, really tiny Linux, right? The ISO, if you look at it, is simply 23 megs. That's all it is. You could have used any other ISO. Boot to Docker comes pre-installed with Docker. If you use some other ISO, you would have to make sure that you install Docker on that yourself. And boot to Docker is simply an image. Oh yeah, if you go to bootdocker.io, the instructions that you find there are for Vagrant. You can use whatever tools you want to use, right? So machine is a Docker project, it's an official Docker project. And that is basically the Docker's prescribed way of spinning up machine. So the other tools that they are built, like take a look at if you have time, like Compose and Swarm, which are clustering solutions for containers, they all work really well with Docker, with machine. Right, so the comment was, you want lightweight containers, that's why you go. So yeah, the basic idea is the host machine, the host Linux, right? You want that to be as lightweight as possible, right? You don't want anything to be there, the host machine, because you're not going to use it. The dependencies, the binaries and the libraries that your app needs are going to run inside of the container, and all of that is going to get downloaded and installed on the machine. The host stuff that you're not going to need it, because your app's not running on that. So boot to Docker is one, but the more popular distribution for Docker is CoreOS. So CoreOS is a distribution of Linux, which is also a very small distribution. So you can go to coreos.com and you can take a look at it. So all typical production deployments, they will use CoreOS. Boot to Docker can be used for dev test. It can be used for production as well, I suppose, but it's not what it's meant for. CoreOS is what is meant for that. CoreOS is another Linux distribution which comes with Docker pre-installed, and it's again, it's very small. So you can use this for your production deployments.
How much is your performance loss as a result of running an app inside Docker as against running it directly on Windows?
So the question is, what is the performance impact of running an application inside a container inside Docker as opposed to running it directly on a host OS? Between those two cases, no difference. Because the reason is, it is, there would be some overhead in the sense that the kernel is actually enforcing the limits that you have set on that particular container. But it turns out that it's practically negligible. Because these are implemented in the kernel, they're extremely high performance. Ultimately, it's simply a process that is running, whether it's on the host or inside the container, it's simply a process, right? So the performance degradation for as a result of running inside a container is, for my experiments, it turns out to be fairly negligible, but I'm sure there would be some edge cases where you might run into issues, where that turns out to be a concern. But typically, the idea behind containers is that you are operating at a high level of abstraction, right? It's like PaaS, right? Platform service. So your application is basically these ephemeral things called as containers. They come, they go away, right? Depending on the requirement, you can do whatever you want with it because they're so cheap to spin up and spin down, right? So you don't really think about them in the same terms of as a VM. Like if you want to spin up a VM and spin up a VM down, that is fairly heavyweight, right? Spinning up a container up and down is fairly straightforward. So it's a little different way of looking at it. Yeah.
Okay.
So the question is, why do Docker containers always start with a base operating system image like Ubuntu or Fedora or whatever it is? The reason is just convenience. Can you create a container completely from scratch? You absolutely can, right? So your base image, I haven't personally tried it, but you can definitely do it. Like you can set up your own environment. You can say that my container will be composed of these 20 different files, right? And when this container is started, I need these particular commands to be run and so on and so forth. So you can set up a completely custom environment that runs on extremely bare bones Linux, like TorOS or Ubuntu Docker, which has nothing else, with just the kernel and Docker. And then you can specify your custom environment and you can definitely run it. There's nothing stopping you from doing that. The reason why most people start with an image like Ubuntu and so on, is because it's simply easy to do that. Like it's simply convenient to do that because Ubuntu comes with all the common tools that you typically depend on, right? You get apt-get for installing your other packages that you need and so on and so forth. If you are doing your own custom image from bare bones, you would have to figure all that out, right? You would have to package all of the dependencies yourself, you would have to install them and make sure that everything works, right? But if that is a requirement, there's nothing stopping you from doing that. You can definitely do that.
What happens when the Docker image fails, container fails?
What happens when the Docker container fails? The container would be gone. What happens to the data inside the container? So, for that, essentially you need to use what is called as a couple of things, depends on your application. One is if you are persisting information to the file system, you can load what is known as a volume. This is when you're spinning up a container, you can associate a volume which is hosted in your host machine. So I can create a particular location, and I can make that location available inside of that container when you spin up the container. This is called as a volume. And then what happens is whenever the container writes to that volume, that information is persisted in the host operating system. You can also create virtual volumes, and you can say that I'm spinning these five containers. All these five containers will write to this particular mount point / blah blah blah, and then all those containers will see that particular address, right? And whatever they write, it will be shared between those containers. And you can make that available in the host as well or not, depending on your application. Right? This is one way you can persist. But the other way to persist is, of course, you know, you can use a managed persistence solution like Redis, hosted Redis or hosted SQL or whatever the case is, right? That would probably be the typical case. It typically goes on a host VM. Yeah.
So, just to
say one more
question.
Yes, so let's go do that because a lot of people ask me the question, how do you do horizontal scalability with Docker containers? So, container orchestration, that's a fancy term for this concept. So the basic idea is, you know, single containers are fine, you can probably manage them fairly straightforward, but if you have an application that is going to run on top of, how are we doing on time? I think probably another 10 minutes. I think we started at 2:50, so probably 2:50. So container orchestration essentially is the idea of creating your containers, running them on a collection of hosts and managing them somehow, right? There are lots of complexities involved there. How do these containers talk to each other, right? And what happens when a particular container becomes unhealthy, like it's not responding or it has crashed? So how do you build an application which is robust, which is resilient to failure? So orchestration is basically the idea of creating a framework that allows you to network containers, that you can do monitoring of health check and make sure that when containers fail, you know, they're replaced by other containers, where resource utilization is balanced across hosts, like you don't want, you know, all of the traffic going to one particular host. How do you do these kinds of things? So there are lots of solutions out there. There are a lot of people who want to solve this problem. Things like Apache Mesos is a project, Fleet is a solution from CoreOS, Kubernetes is a solution from Google, Swarm is Docker's official orchestration solution. Swarm and Compose. So those are two Docker projects which work together that allow you to spin up containers. Panamax is a orchestration solution from a company called CenturyLink, which is an internet provider in the US. And there are more and more coming up. And even Microsoft is, you know, Microsoft's WinFab, which is the orchestration engine that powers Azure, right? So there are some work going on that front as well. And, sorry, WinFab, Windows Fabrication. Azure has support for running all of these orchestration engines. Like you can run many of these projects. If you want to take a look at what that looks like, very quickly let's take a look at Swarm. So Swarm is a project from Docker that allows you to do orchestration. right? Basically run clusters of containers across hosts. So what I have done here is I've created a little shell script to spin up a, a little shell script to spin up a collection of host VMs on Azure. So essentially what I do here is I set up a TLS key using OpenSSL. I generate a TLS key and then I go ahead and create a virtual network. So here I'm using this Azure network, and so forth. These commands are basically a cross-platform CLI tool from Azure. So this is basically a Node.js based tool set that allows you to administer Azure from Linux, from OS X, or from Windows. For Windows, you also have PowerShell. You can do PowerShell automation also. But for Linux and Mac, you can use this cross-platform CLI. So in this case, I'm creating a virtual network, and I'm creating a bunch of VMs inside that virtual network. One called as Swarm Master, then three nodes. So how Swarm works is you have an orchestration engine called as the Swarm Daemon or the Swarm Engine or the Swarm Master. So I've just created a VM called as Swarm Master, and then three nodes. So the idea is I want the engine, the orchestration engine, to be running on this VM, and these are the worker nodes where my containers will get deployed. And then I generate an SSH configuration so that I can SSH into it. So spinning up all these VMs takes time, so I've already kind of done that. The script is available on GitHub if you want to experiment with it yourself. Yeah, here I'm showing you how you can run this on Azure. So the question is, the idea behind Docker is that you can run multiple applications in a single host. Yes, you can. With isolation, absolutely, yes. You can do that. But when you're talking about production scale, right, there is a limit to how much you can scale a single host. And you can create bigger VMs, but then you will always run into a limit. The real scalability you get is when you start scaling it horizontally to multiple hosts, right? So correct. So the benefit is, think of your virtual machines as a pool of computing resource, right? So a tool like Swarm or Kubernetes, what it allows you to do is, it allows you to forget the fact that you have 50 VMs that are there in your subscription, right? And look at your that particular pool of machines as a computing resource that you can simply use for whatever you need. So my application has a front end, it has a batch job processing middle tier, it also has a data layer. Right? I want to operate at that level of abstraction. I don't want to really think about my front end is running on VMs 3, 7, and 9, my middle tier is running on VMs 20, 24, and 27, and then create tools to monitor. Like, you know, that's a lot of work, right? If you think about taking an application like this and spinning that up. So that's what Swarm allows you to do. For Swarm, not yet, they're still kind of building that, it's kind of early days. Kubernetes is somewhat more mature from Google. Mesos is also a pretty mature product. What this allows you to do is, it allows you to say that, define your application topology, right? I say that I have my VM, I have my front-end, web front-end, I want like 15 instances of this, right? I have my middle tier, I want 5 instances of this, or whatever your combination is, and just throw it at your orchestration engine, and that goes and figures out which host to run it on. Like, it basically has algorithms to determine, you know, what is the most optimal way of deploying your app and running it. And then it makes sure that the container is working and everything works fine.
So, can you share
a different app?
Can you configure the resources?
Yes, of course.
That's how you utilize the resources.
Correct. You can run multiple apps in the same host.
You have two containers in the same host because they won't be forwarding and all
work. So, the comment is, can you run the same app multiple times in different containers on the same host? Yes, you can. In fact, that is done frequently. So typically, so in case you have it depends on the app, right? So if you are a front end, depends on your app. So for example, let's say that you have your web app and it listens on port 80 and you want to run three of those on the same machine. You remember that the networking interface is virtualized, right? So each one gets 80. You can map that to different ports on the host, or you can create a proxy process which communicates that and does the forwarding, the reverse proxying, all kinds of things. Right? It really depends on your application. You can do any kind of mapping that you want to do. But yes, you have that flexibility. And tools like Swarm kind of take that complexity away from you, so you don't have to worry about it. Yes?
Within Swarm or whatever, after the
The question is, are these production ready tools like Swarm and Kubernetes and so on? That's a fairly complex involved question, right? I would say that Swarm and Kubernetes probably not yet. Kubernetes somewhat is more mature than Swarm. Swarm, you know, it is usable today, but then you know Docker themselves don't recommend that you do production deployments with Swarm. Something like Apache Mesos or Fleet and so on, those are much more mature. I've been asked to kind of stop, I think. So Swarm, a couple of other things that I wanted to show you as well. Orchestration with Kubernetes and... Okay, oh, I have some giveaways here. Just 1 minute. How much time do we have exactly?
35 seconds.
Maybe I'll hang around and we can discuss, because you know we are already running behind through the day. So this is some of the information. You can go to my GitHub if you want to take a look at the Swarm script, and there's also an app that I want to show which I didn't get to show. There is another session tomorrow, Docker on Azure. We didn't even get to the comparative about Puppet and Chef and so on. There's a session on Docker tomorrow at 12 noon in the compute hall. So you can continue the discussion there. There will be some overlap on the content, but I hope to show the orchestration demos there. So if you have questions, I'll hang around. Thank you.